Richard, underwater in underground bases as well. How many of those do we have on this planet?
Well, that's an even better question. Let me begin to address that by saying, when I first began my research, I had been approached by some people who told me, Richard, you know, the people doing the serious work underground are the United States Navy. And at the time, being new to the research and having very little documentation to work with, I thought, you know, who are these people and how ignorant can you possibly be? You know, the United States Navy has certain functions and activities it carries out, and they involve going to sea. They involve submarines and aircraft carriers. That's what the Navy does.
Yes, right.
Well, have I gotten an education?
Yeah, at least that's the Navy that I belong to did, but yeah. Maybe I wasn't in the right part.
Yeah. Well, like I said, that was my initial response to these people. And then I began, as time went on, to find some little threads and bits and pieces of information that indeed revealed naval interest in underground construction and excavation. And I put a little bit of that in my first book. And then the first book came out, and I felt again that I had been there and done that, that I'd covered the topic, I'd gone, you know, into the stacks at research libraries and shook the shelves real good.
Yeah.
And that I got all the information that fell off and put it there in the book, and that was that. Well, that was until I found this document from the China Lake Naval Weapons Station. Yeah, that place again. And I, you know, almost fell to the floor when I saw this thing, because it unambiguously reveals that as of 1966, the United States Navy was very seriously looking into making large, elaborate, deeply buried, technologically sophisticated, permanently manned and inhabited installations and bases well out to sea, even hundreds of miles out to sea beneath hundreds or thousands of feet of water, down in the seabed, beneath the bottom of the seafloor. And, you know, another mind bender, George. I mean, this
That's
line
incredible.
Of research. Pardon me?
That's incredible.
Yeah, well, but it's there in black and white. And I cite this document in my book, Underwater and Underground Bases. So when I saw that, I was thinking, right, can this be true? And the document lays out the technology involved in doing this, that as of 1966, using state-of-the-art machinery, equipment, and expertise, then available.
Now, did you say bases underneath the seafloor?
That's it. Burrowed down in the rock, going down hundreds or even, you know, a couple thousand feet.
Would it flood out as they dug it? How could they do it?
Well, you know, I lay all this out. In fact, the document lays it all out in detail. And as of 1966, the technology was already there to do that in the petroleum industry, in the mining industry. And there's about at least three ways it can be done. One, you can tunnel out undersea from onshore. You can start, say you're making just... Pretend you're making a subway tunnel in New York City or Boston
mm-hmm,
or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And you just start tunneling due east and don't stop.
And you go deeper and deeper and
you're
deeper.
You're down in the rock. First you're going under Long Island Sound. Then you head it out and you just go out under the continental shelf.
Boy, you better make sure it never leaks, because you're gonna flood an entire city.
Well, actually... You know, that's one way. The second way is to either build an island offshore or to use a naturally occurring island offshore and run a shaft straight down and then tunnel out from the bottom of the shaft and make, you know, as extensive a tunnel system as you want. And then the third way is to go out, say, with a submersible. This would be a submarine with a drilling rig on the side of the submarine. And for the submarine to go down on the seafloor and drill a bore a shaft. The document describes a shaft in the range of 5 to 8 feet in diameter. Actually, the technology exists to make that shaft much, much wider in diameter. But remember, this is 1966. And then to drop a seamless welded tube with an airlock on both ends into that bored shaft in the seafloor and cement that in there very tightly.
Just slide it right down there.
Slide it in and cement it in with quick-setting cement.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there is cement that you can use like that underwater. And then you can send personnel down if you, you know, in a diving bell or whatever. And coupled to that airlock, well, from the submarine itself, as a matter of fact, coupled to that airlock, transfer personnel into the airlock, and then they can burrow down, bore down, tunnel down from the bottom of that tube, which could be, you know, 50 feet or more long, and keep on going down however far you want to go, 500 feet, 2,000 feet, 3,000 feet, and then tunnel out. And, of course, you could have layers of tunnels, different levels.
Now, what's the purpose of having an underwater base of all
things? Well, you see, the document doesn't really go much into that, George.
I mean, it sounds like a pain in the neck to make, so there's got to be a tremendous benefit here.
Yeah, what is the benefit? That's the question. And the document doesn't really answer that question. What I have run into in doing this research is every time I answer one question, even when I run across an answer to a question I hadn't asked or hadn't even thought of, I find that for every answer that I get, 10 more seemingly arrive to take its place. I can only tell you that these plans exist, and so then I was wondering whether it's been done. So you ask around, and you get these Sphinx-like replies, and then so you're wondering, right, well, these people are telling me, in essence, hey, nice try, kid. Maybe they are, and maybe they aren't. So I'm back to square one, right? And then I continued the research, and I found, I would say, a very interesting circumstantial paper trail, or evidence trail. One of the things I discovered is that it's probably a mistake when you're thinking of projects like this to imagine in your mind that there are neat lines of demarcation between the Navy, the United States Army Corps of Engineers, major you know, Fortune 500 companies like Bechtel or Halliburton or big outfits like that, or Parsons, or Parsons Brinckerhoff. These are major construction companies with the capability to do projects like this, and other agencies such as the Department of Energy, and unnamed agencies that may not be in the public awareness at all. In reality, what I would guess from looking at the literature is that a lot of this is done on an ad hoc, very secret basis. It's not constitutional, it's not legal in this regard. These projects and the funding for them do not go through the constitutionally mandated system of checks and balances.
The old black ops budgets.
Black ops. There is no congressional oversight. It's done because it can be done. And those on the inside know what they're doing. If what they're doing is malevolent, I suppose they justify it to themselves.
Could it be for this purpose, Richard, that there are some people on this planet that are so concerned with their own survival in the event of, let's say, an asteroid that hits us or some other calamity, that all they care about is saving their own tails, and so they're building these things?
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain arc-like function, as you're alluding to, But again, if it's done under the rubric of national security, understand that this has nothing to do with the security of the vast majority of people in the United States or anywhere else.
Yeah, you save the politicians and they won't have anybody around to rule.
Not even the politicians. Maybe it's only the people who are involved in these projects, because your average politician doesn't have any idea, I promise you.